an NBC Sports Radio weekend where every day is game day. Now, let's roll with Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels.
Glad you made us a part of your day. We appreciate it. It's NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com, mobile app, yours free at the App Store. Speaking of sports, so we'd like to shove the box score aside and take a slightly different look at the world of sports and the individuals making news in it. And one of those individuals that continues to make news, although he's not only no longer in sports, he's no longer with us on planet Earth, that's Aaron Hernandez, but his fiance going on the Dr. Phil show has got that story fired right back up again. And later on in the program, we're going to speak with Sally Jenkins from the Washington Post. She's been following this story as well as the Dr. Phil show. Hey, it comes with the turf. And we'll get her take on a number of questions because, you know, there's a couple of big questions that you want to ask Cheyenne Jenkins Hernandez. That's who we're talking about that went on the Dr. Phil show. Is Aaron Hernandez's fiance. And there's a couple of big questions. One of them is the, you know, the big black box. But anyway, we'll get into that with Sally Jenkins from the Post. That's coming up just a little bit later on. Stories that have raised my eyebrows this week that I wanted to share with you. Despite getting a vasectomy years ago, NFL star Antonio Cromartie is expecting his 14th child. He and his wife announced that she's carrying the couple's sixth child, so six with his current wife, but 14 children together. Antonio Cromartie giving new meaning to the term baller, I suppose, right? Rob Manfred, MLB commissioner, is talking about the health of the league, the future of the league. And one of the things that gets brought up is like, you know, what about the expansion of the league? Rob Manfred says he's eyeing 2019 for regular season games in, you guessed it, Europe. London, I guess, will be the first place that it goes. In December of next year, Yankees president confirmed the Boston Herald that the franchise is interested in playing the Red Sox in London, saying, yeah, we want to do that. Wouldn't it be great if you could get the Red Sox and the Yankees? You want to talk about an exhibition game. Wow. Red Sox and the Yankees in London. But listen, they're going down the same path that NFL is going down. And I'm wondering, is Major League Baseball doing this because football is doing it? I mean, does Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball think that playing some exhibition games in Europe or just in London, like the NFL does, is going to help grow their sport? In turn, does the NFL believe that their growth over the past few years has been about going to the NFL? Listen, on this show just 1 week ago, we had Christian Okoye, who I ran into at Eric Dickerson's charity golf tournament a couple of weeks ago, saying that he thinks it's a great idea. The games sell out quickly. The fans are excited. They're into it. They understand the game. He thinks it's a great idea. I'm a big believer that the NFL's recent success, and I'm going to go as far as the last 10 years, has got everything in the world to do with fantasy football. That's what's blown their numbers up. I don't think going to London is what's blowing their numbers up, and I think Rob Manfred and MLB is eyeing Europe the same way, thinking they're going to get the same kind of thing or a similar result, which is growing the game. I'm not so sure that's a great idea. Look, play all the exhibition games that you want to, but you're going to make these things count. I mean, I guess it's got to be fair for both of them. Maybe you take two teams out of the same division. Maybe that makes sense. Dana White, who is a pretty sharp cookie, UFC president Dana White says that he's got Conor McGregor all ready to go. They've come to terms on a fight with Floyd Mayweather, and he says McGregor's side is done. I'm starting to work on the Mayweather side now. This is an absolute exhibition. That's what this is. It's an exhibition fight when you're going to take, I don't know, I'm going to just roughly say two-thirds. When you take two-thirds of a guy's game away from him, I mean, how can you expect, you can't possibly expect Conor McGregor to beat Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match. And they asked straight up, let's get this cleared up. The press asking, is this going to be contested under MMA rules or boxing? Quote, it's going to be straight up boxing. Close quote. Dana White. I don't know how much money I'm willing to shell out for an exhibition fight like that. Conor McGregor said he wants, all along said he wants $100 million to do this. He wants $100 million for an exhibition? I don't understand this really on any level. Don't understand this really either. LeVar Ball, who is the the way it's termed here on our website, the outspoken father. That's one way to characterize him, huh? The outspoken father of former UCLA star Lonzo Ball. He was loose on Colin Cowherd's show over on Fox the other day and said that now any shoe company that wants his son, stakes just went up. Lakers got the number two pick. He wants $3 billion. Quote, if they want to talk to me now, it just went up to $3 billion. Triple Bs. Billion, billion, billion. He goes on to say, stop it. You're crying. Stop it. Stop it. Quote, now that Lonzo's headed to Los Angeles. Wait, what? Now that Lonzo's headed to Los Angeles, what they should have done is give me $1 billion and let me be on my way. Close quote, LeVar Ball. He just wants to get paid. God, man, is this the worst case of gravy training your kid you've ever seen? He hasn't played a second in the NBA. He's already decided what the Lakers' number two pick is going to be for them. He's told the rest of the league that his son's not going to work out for anybody but the Lakers. It's almost like you've got a father, a little league, a maniac little league father trying to strong arm the Los Angeles Lakers into drafting his kid. You know, honestly, as a Laker fan, I don't want all that baggage. And as just an analyst, I look at this and I think that's the worst possible place for him to go. If his kid goes to Indiana, if he goes to Orlando, you're not going to have anywhere near the problems that you're going to have of LeVar Ball being able to drive over to Staples Center and be ready to talk to the press after every single game. This guy has been captain disrespect, disrespected the UCLA program and their players, which, oh, by the way, were kids, not professionals. When he said, you can't win no championships with no white boys. Yeah, nice quote. That's the guy that you want to invite into your family? I mean, again, I think this plays better and this kid works out better for somebody else. I think the number one place, the only place that he wants his kid to go is the only place that he shouldn't go. And that's the Lakers. Because this father is a nut. And really, he says straight up, that's all he wants. They should have given me the $1 billion and let me be on my way. Crazy, crazy talk out of a parent. James Harden is being sued. Probably not what you might think, though. He's being sued by Moses Malone Jr. Harden's lawyer says that that's exactly what's going on, and what it's about is pretty crazy. Fox Television reported in Houston that Moses Malone Jr. filed a suit that alleges Harden paid a group of people $20,000 in cash to attack and rob Moses Malone Jr. at VLive Strip Club. Oh, by the way, that was about a year ago. Okay. Faux robberies and strip clubs, and yeah, you know what? We're just going to go ahead and pass on that one. Coming up here in just a couple of minutes, we love to do this on Speaking of Sports. We have the professor talking about the business of sports, and there is plenty of business and dollars and endorsements to talk about when it comes to our world. Rick Hoare will join us coming up here in just a couple of minutes. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. Glad you're with us. We're speaking of sports. And on the line to talk about the dollars, the business, the money, the endorsements, it's the sports professor Rick Hoare going to join us now. Good morning, sir. Where do we find you today?
We're at home in Florida to watch some hockey and then the bucket list, the Indy 500 week. NHL Stanley Cup Game 1 in Pittsburgh, assuming that happens next Monday. But more important thing, I'll know we'll talk about it a little bit, but 101st running of the Indy 500. And I just wanted to tell you, whether you asked me or not, that, you know, in 1911, mm-hmm. when they ran it first,
right.
the population of the whole city was 200,000 people. Now that's more that attends the race than the entire city population of Indianapolis. It's an incredible, incredible event.
It really is. It draws so, so many people. And you know what? We have these great, unique events. I mean, people ask why it's hard for Americans to embrace the sport of soccer. And I mean, slowly and over time, they're making progress and they're getting better. But I think the reason is because we have football, baseball, basketball, hockey, and these great events like the Indy 500 that really gobble up people's attention for sports.
Well, and it also allows creative marketers to do some things that they might not otherwise do with events that are less significant, let's say. Dan Towers, the CEO of Guggenheim Life, put together a tournament called the Women in Tech Championship. I was involved in that a bit, and we'll talk about that more in Labor Day. But it's a golf tournament held at the Brickyard Crossing, which is the golf course where four holes are actually inside the track. Now, they're not playing at the same time now. But what he did was he sponsored a car in the A.J. Foyt Racing stable driven by Zach Veach. Watch that. It's the Indy Intech car with the logo on it. And it is an incredible tie, not only to the community and now golf and racing together, but the idea of the Guggenheim sponsorship is to promote training and robotics and workforce and women empowerment and tie it into Indy and sports and national and the track. It's an amazing idea. And my point is, you can't do that with events that are fairly small or regular. Special guys, special events, special sponsorship, special weekend.
Yeah, no question. And a very special event, no question. Rick Harrell is our guest, the professor. We're talking about the business of sports. I mentioned soccer just a moment ago and North America's request for a fast-track approval so they can get their 2026 in, a bid in for the 2026 World Cup. Looks like they're going to get this. Is it going to happen?
Well, it's probably ours to lose when you put it this way. Okay. You know, the FIFA rules say that when you go to a place, you can't go to that territory within the next cycle. So Russia, 18, Qatar, 2022. Mm-hmm. So Africa and South America are the only ones kind of left. Antarctica, maybe. It's probably too cold down there for the World Cup.
Probably.
But, you know, 2026 looks like the event. And, frankly, North America together, Canada, Mexico, U.S., has decided to put a bid together that says, here are the specs. You know, you tell me if we've met it. We haven't. Let's change it. If we have, let's select now so we have a whole lot of time to promote it. And it looks like that's picking up some traction. So I think we have the World Cup to look forward to in 2026. And, by the way, we have cooperation between the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, which God knows we need, right?
Yeah. Exactly. But, I mean, great to see that thing come our way. Now let's talk some really, really big dollars here. The Sinclair Broadcast Group has agreed to buy Tribune Media. That's $3.9 billion. Involved in that are the rights to the Cubs and the Yankees. What does that mean to their broadcasts?
Well, you know, they'll be on, but it'll be spread out over different kind of networks, and it's not happening yet until Justice Department approval and FCC. But the bigger issue, it's, you know, everybody wants to see the Cubs and the Yankees, but the bigger issue is the Tribune has 42 TV stations, but the bulging portfolio of Sinclair includes 173. And what they're doing is, and the Tennis Channel, what they're doing is they're looking at creating a mega network in time for the next series of sports rights bidding cycles. So look for NFL and other leagues to get richer. Why? Because they have another horse in the race, which means the bids can be higher. It's not just the Yahoos and the Facebooks and the Googles potentially coming out of left field, but it's also another large behemoth called Sinclair.
Now, speaking of the Yankees, they had quite a celebration at Yankee Stadium last Sunday. They retired Derek Jeter's number, and all the Yankee fans, I'm sure, all had a great time. But down the coast, not too far, was a young man that's probably going to make a whole lot more money than Derek Jeter, huh?
Yeah, well, that was my bucket list satisfaction when I called you last Sunday, heading to that Jeter retirement. Mm-hmm. You don't make people like that anymore, by the way, whether he buys a piece of the Marlins or not. That was huge. And as you just said, down the coast, an event that didn't get as much publicity but did in Washington. So Bryce Harper avoids arbitration, $22 million for a year, the biggest arbitration avoidance contract ever in the history of this world and any other. And the irony is, so everybody says, let's go into the next big negotiation feeling good about each other. And if that means let's do this to avoid arbitration, let's get it done. Here's the bigger issue. RFK Stadium, by the way, when it opened in 1961,
yeah.
$24 million. It's almost as expensive to pay one player 1 year as it was to build the whole darn stadium. What do you think of that?
Wow, how is that for dollar comparison? Seriously, that's like a quarterback's annual salary versus what, the whole stadium? Was that what the stadium deal was for RFK? $24
million?
Whole
stadium.
Wow. God.
Whole stadium.
It's amazing.
Including the concession stands and if you want to throw in some parking.
Let's stay with stadiums for just a second.
By the way, 1961. I remember when it was open, so that means you and I, pal, are very old.
That's you, pal. The Las Vegas Raiders, okay, talking about stadiums, they've begun, or they're going to begin construction, I guess, for their new stadium. That happens in January. They're saying they hope to have it done by 2020. Look, they're used to building things quick in that town. They build those high-rises all over the place. They should be able to be done in time for 2020, shouldn't they?
Yeah, but the roof is a monster, and every stadium is best practices over another one. You know, Dallas was great. Indy was great. Minnesota trumped that, so to speak. Got to find a new expression these days. And now L.A. and now Vegas. And so probably so. But the irony is we have some construction delays in Los Angeles, and that's 2020, and now Vegas. So we have two great stadiums coming up. Whether they open, by the way, my take, in 2019 or 2020 is almost irrelevant. They're going to last 30, 40 years. They're going to bring in Final Fours and Super Bowls and conventions. And whether if there's going to be a delay, you ought to know it now, I guess is the point. And it's much ado about nothing. People in L.A. were up in arms this week about the delay, and I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, it's backing them up a year, too. Another year at the StubHub Center for the Chargers, I guess. And then another year for the Rams, the Coliseum, which they're in the process of remodeling, too. So that's kind of messy and sloppy over there. One of the great things that the NHL does is this Winter Classic, and it is coming to New York City. Who's it going to be?
Well, it's going to be the Sabres and the Rangers. It's a Sabres home game because the Rangers have to play all of their home games at MSG, according to the contract. But the last time the Rangers played the Flyers, Citizens Bank Park in Philly in 2012, and the Penguins and the Sabres played the first Winter Classic in 2008, 1-12, 1-8. Coming back to the city, a great NYC event. Will be competition that day because the college football playoff rotation returns to New Year's with the Rose and the Sugar this year being the semis. So there's going to be a lot of competition, but Gary Bettman is up for it, as we know, and coming to New York, it's a great deal.
And the Winter Classic thing, I think everybody loves that. You know, I'm not going to say especially, but in addition to the regular fans, the casual fans, I think they love that outdoor thing. It's a cool look and makes for, you know, it's a different looking event. I think it's fun. I think everybody enjoys it.
Well, what did we say earlier in this interview? Big events carry the day these days. Just like the Indy 500, the Winter Classic is that kind of excitement.
Quickly, the Cincinnati Reds are having a hard time attracting people to their home games. They're about a 500 ball club, but they're having really a hard time with the fans. Do you know, is there a glaring problem there?
Yeah, it's called Jay Bruce and Todd Frazier. They ain't there. That's the glaring problem. But, you know, that should rectify itself on the field. The weather gets warmer. The kids are out of school. I was there 2 weeks ago for that Yankee series. They were playing well. The weather was okay, but nobody was there. And so this is a good example of a team that's iconic, used to winning. They're 26th in attendance now. They've got to get better. But I think the weather and hopefully the performance on the field will allow them to do it.
Hopefully, because you know what? You're in a tough situation in that division. You got the Cubs, the St. Louis Cardinals as well. I mean, you got a lot of competition when it comes to that. You know, the last thing that I want to get your take on before I let you get out the door on us here is the naming rights. The Coliseum, the USC Trojans have made a pretty big whopper deal, haven't they?
Yeah, how about all the tweeting about, obviously United Airlines, but how about all the tweeting that they get to throw you out of your seat and, you know.
That's where I'm going with this. Wasn't that a curious choice?
Of course you are. I set you up for that, right?
Yeah,
So the bottom line is if United's going to cut a deal, I think they probably should have waited a little while for that to die down, don't you think?
I think so. Rick Haro, the professor, talking the dollars of sports. Thanks for being with us, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you in Indy next week.
All right, man. Sounds good stuff. Coming up next in the program, hope you'll stay with us. Sally Jenkins from The Post is next on NBC. NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Wow, we got one for you this time. Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez's story is both fascinating and tragic. Remarkable talent and ability that led to world-class success and millions of dollars, but also a dark and sinister side that led down a path of criminal behavior, murder, and even prison. When news of Aaron Hernandez's death broke, there were many stories circulating that it was a suicide, that it was a murder, that he planned his death for financial gain. Sally Jenkins is with the Washington Post. She joins us now for hopefully some answers in this made-for-TV real-life drama. Good morning, Sally. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
It really is.
is a made-for-TV movie, and I'm sure out here in Los Angeles where I work, there's people about every other block that are working on the story. But the first thing I'm going to ask you, I'm just going to go down the laundry list here. Are we sure that Aaron Hernandez did, in fact, commit suicide? No foul play is suspected?
Well, I mean, as sure as someone in my position can be. I mean, I don't have, you know, all the files and all of that stuff. But, you know, I'm taking the word of the people who were in the prison and the evidence that they found, and they don't seem to have much question on the subject. You know, there was an investigation, and unless there's, and I suppose there's a chance of a cover-up, but, you know, he certainly left letters. I mean, we know that.
Yeah, it seems unlikely. This is supposed to be one of the more high-tech prisons in the country. And, you know, when you go anywhere, if you're outdoors in public anywhere, you got to just go ahead and assume that you're on camera. I would imagine there are many cameras at this place, so we're just going to go with a no foul play. But next is the suicide letters or notes. I mean, are we sure exactly how many he wrote and to who?
No. I mean, all we have are the word of, you know, we have the word of basically attorneys who say there were three. And they've named the three people, and the three people are apparently his family, his fiance, and his daughter. You know, there were all these rumors or reports from one sort of fringe attorney claiming that he'd had an affair with a prisoner, and that one of the letters was for the prisoner. But the only letters that I've seen confirmed by you know, what I would consider to be reputable sources. Those references are all to just three letters to his immediate family, basically.
Cheyenne Jenkins Hernandez, who took Aaron Hernandez's last name legally, and we'll get to that in just a moment, said in a two-part interview on the Dr. Phil show, she said a number of things, including this quote, "He was very positive, so excited to come home." Do you know what she meant by that, excited to come home?
Well, I mean, you know, he had gotten a reversal on appeal in one of the cases, and was, you know, his attorneys were preparing to file an appeal in the Odin Lloyd murder because they never did find the murder weapon there, and so there was some faint chance that he could get that conviction, that he could challenge that conviction as well. He had a very, very good lawyer, and he did seem optimistic, you know, in the courtroom on the day that the other appeal on the other shooting was overturned on appeal. But the problem is that, you know, she also went public with the letter that he wrote her, and the letter that I saw, the contents of that letter are basically suggest a guy who had decided to take himself out to make his family financially secure. I mean, he literally says in the letter to his fiance, "You're rich."
Yeah. Sally Jenkins with the Washington Post. We're talking about the latest in the Aaron Hernandez story, and that includes a Dr. Phil appearance by Aaron Hernandez's fiance. Now, since his suicide reports have linked Hernandez with a fellow inmate that you mentioned a moment ago at the correctional center where he was being held, Hernandez had spoken to prison officials and asked to share a cell with Kyle Kennedy, but that request was denied. Cheyenne Jenkins said that she found it difficult to believe that he might have been gay, saying, quote, "I don't know where this comes from. It's embarrassing. In a sense, it's hurtful, regardless if it's true or not." Close quote. Was Aaron Hernandez having a homosexual relationship with another inmate?
Well, I mean, you know, that was the implication, I guess, by some of the people who reported that. And there, I did see one report that said that prosecutors had actually told her that when they were questioning her in the Odin Lloyd murder. And there was some supposition that one potential angle on the motive for murdering Odin Lloyd was that Odin Lloyd had somehow got on to the fact that, I think you've seen probably the same reports I have, you know, that somehow that could have potentially been a motive in the murder of Odin Lloyd to silence him so that he wouldn't tell anyone that Aaron Hernandez was sexual. You know, we have no way. Look, there's no such thing as independent confirmation of what happens in someone's bedroom. And it seems to me an irrelevant, you know, point. And, you know, I think it's silly. I can see how his fiance would find something like that hurtful. And I think it's probably I don't think it's the right thing to do to sort of discuss it, particularly since we can't really possibly know, and we can't, we can't confirm something like that. And it's frankly not really the job of a reporter at this stage to go digging around in that.
Cheyenne whiffed on the big mystery involving her directly, however, in this Dr. Phil interview, the contents of a box that Hernandez asked her to dispose of in a call from jail the day after the arrest for the Odin Lloyd murder. Speculation was that the box contained the murder weapon, but it was never found. And Jenkins Hernandez says that she had no idea what it contained, telling Dr. Phil, quote, "I'm glad I didn't look. I don't want to know anything that can hurt me. In a sense, I'd rather be in the dark with a situation like that." Close quote. Do you believe her?
I guess I do. I mean, I think more importantly, I think the cops believed her. You know, it's not really up to me to decide how believable she is. I mean, it appears to me that law enforcement found that believable, or at least not challengeable enough to really go after her. You know, the way you would a full-on accessory who's covering up a murder. You know, so I think that's my opinion of that statement. You know, I don't think anybody seriously believes that she was, you know, part of any kind of conspiracy to cover up a murder. I think she's in a terrible position.
No question about that. Now, Aaron Hernandez, as we touched on here just a second ago, wrote suicide notes. He wrote one to Cheyenne, as you mentioned, and part of it saying, quote, "You're rich," among other things. Do you believe that Aaron Hernandez, I mean, this is a story that's being shopped around. I mean, I'm wondering, do you believe, after what you've heard, read, investigated yourself, that Aaron Hernandez took his own life to ensure that his wife and child would collect millions of dollars owed to him by the Patriots?
You know, I do. I think it's the simplest, most logical explanation. I don't, I don't particularly see the evidence of anything to the contrary. You know, everything that we see, starting with that letter, suggests that that's exactly what he did. You know, I think it's pretty cut and dried. I mean, had he not left those letters, I think you could certainly challenge what happened here and ask if some gang-related issue had gotten him in prison, you know, or something like that. But, you know, I think that letter, when you read the contents of it, it seems pretty clear that he made that decision. You know, the other thing that we haven't discussed is the possibility that he was doing synthetic marijuana in prison, which can make people absolutely, psychotic. You know, that's another potential angle here, is that, you know, he may very well have seemed optimistic and then decided in the throes of synthetic marijuana that this was the way out, you know.
And you know what? Someone as young as he is, looking at maybe 40 or 50 years in that cell, maybe that is a way out. The Odin Lloyd civil case is coming, and so are their lawyers, who are going to want every penny that they can get. I'm wondering, do you believe that Cheyenne is going to be characterized in this case as an accomplice to murder due to her involvement with that black box? And do you believe she's ever going to see a penny of that Patriot money?
Well, I mean, you know, look, it's going to be a, you know, all the scavenging starts now, you know.
Yeah.
I think they'll probably try to cast her in as harsh a light as possible, and I think that basically, you know, anything that can be gotten, they'll try to get it. You know, lawyers will try to get it, whether it's from the Patriots or whether it's from her or whether it's from his estate.
And only time will tell. I guess we'll just have to continue to watch this one like we've been doing and see how it plays out. Sally Jenkins, author, columnist, and writer for The Washington Post. Follow her on Twitter at Sally, J-E-N-X. Sally, thanks for being with us this morning on NBC Sports Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
A long way to go before we see the end of that story. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Coming up next, we'll turn on the microphone in Pete Fox's studio, see what he's up to. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com.